Yes. There we go.
Live from the Shangri-La of South County.
Coming to you from Rust's Intestine.
In the state of disrepair?
I don't feel like adding it this time. It's in a perpetual state of disrepair.
That is for sure. We also have Roadhouse on the show with us. Dr. Roadhouse.
Good evening.
What are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking Jack Daniel's straight up.
What about Nate?
I'm drinking a really tasty but strong as fuck beer called Golden Drock. And I went on the website for this beer, and there's actually a video with a guy. It's some obscure Belgian guy with a Dutch accent because he's from Flanders. I guess that's where the brewery is for Golden Drock. Flanders is like the northern part of Belgium, like where it's right there where with the Netherlands. So he's Belgian, but he's got a really strong Dutch accent, and it's funny listening to him talk about the history of the beer. You don't have to play it. I'll just link it to you to put in the show notes.
Channel.
But yeah,
Nate,
you bought this for my birthday, so thank you. And it's really good. It's kind of like it's really malty. It's kind of got like a subtle sweetness. The head is really interesting. It's like almost like a nitro consistency. It's very creamy.
That's weird.
Yeah. It's not strong at first. Like when you take the first sip, you're like, wow, this tastes really good. And then after that, you get the alcohol notes that kick in, and it's like, and it kind of lasts. It kind of lingers on your tongue a bit. So you can't really chug this stuff. Like I'm kind of taking sips of it at a time.
Yeah, you might have to age it.
It's almost like a wine, the way you got to drink it. You don't drink it like a beer. You got to kind of drink it differently. I like it though. It's really good. It's interesting because I've had beers that are like 8% and like really shitty malt liquors that are around that, like 7.5-8%, and you always taste the alcohol in those. It's like overwhelming. But this at 10.5%, the alcohol, it's there, but it's a lot more subtle. Like it kind of like, it's very smooth. It's not overwhelming. Like as soon as you taste it. So I can see this pairing really well with food. Maybe like a steak or something. Chicken, roast chicken. This is like a true, this is like, I've never had anything like this. It's really different.
You've had Chimay Blue, haven't you?
I don't think so. I've had Chimay before, but I don't know what the blue one is.
It's standard Chimay. It's going to be extra malty, Belgian spices. I'm trying to think of the characteristics. It's been a while.
This beer is sweet almost. That's why it reminds me of wine also.
I'm getting this obnoxious packet loss problem. Hopefully it clears up. What's new? I think Roadhouse got an iPad. The new iPad Pro.
So I definitely just got a new iPad Pro. I've tested it out for the last couple days, and I'm really starting to enjoy it. The feature I like the most is more Surface-like than iPad-like. However, it seems like Apple won at this game.
What's that? What's the feature?
Well, the feature is the OneNote app. You know, we've talked about before how I have 14 years of using OneNote on first a tablet PC, then a desktop, and now a combination of Surface, iPad. Oh,
the desktop app's bad, if that's what you're going to rant about.
Oh, I wasn't going to rant. It integrates pretty nicely with how I work because all the stuff I save a PDF, I drag into OneNote and then write notes on it. However, the way the iPad works with it, the writing is much smoother, it's more responsive, and it just seems like it's going in a better direction than the Office 2016 version of OneNote. Not the built-in Windows 10 version, that version is garbage, but the Office 2016 version just can't compete at this for what I use it for marking up PDFs and writing notes about classes I take or little seminars that I go to. Just the iPad app is way more responsive, it opens quicker, and the writing is more natural, which is something I would not have believed.
Yeah, the iOS app in general is good, but the problem with the Windows version is that, which would be the Office 2013 and 2016 versions, which are basically the same thing, they run like shit. Like, if you put it on anything less than a solid-state drive, the program will actually lag. Like, it just freezes up, and then there's all kinds of if you just do Google search for like OneNote lag or OneNote sluggishness, you'll find tons of Windows support forums and stuff like that referencing that, and it runs like a dog. It's the problem with the Office suite too is they want you to run it in 32-bit mode for compatibility reasons so that you can run add-ons. That's the sole reason, because they, I guess, have like there. I don't even know if there are add-ons for 64-bit. I think they just have to be for 32-bit. Like
that is seriously going to sink their ship. Office is just always behind. It took them like 5 years to adopt the iPad.
I think
they held it back so they could re-release mobile Windows with Office.
I think it's funny that that their apps on their competitors' OS are better.
It's because they're not held back by legacy stuff. There was nothing on the platform.
Well, for what most people use it for, I bet it is better. There are a lot of features that are missing from the iPad version, but the iPad version for taking notes on a page or taking notes on a picture, but just no comparison. I had a lot of those issues with the lag in the desktop thing. I fought it for a while until I found one tip, which seems counterintuitive, but it worked. And you're gonna probably go crazy about this, but the tip was to disable hardware acceleration system wide in Office applications.
Yeah, it has.
Why does it suck so much?
Excel too, the hardware acceleration.
Hey, can you guys wait? But I'm gonna reconnect. I just switched over to Ethernet.
What I've seen with OneNote, though, where everything is just completely comes to a halt.
Hello?
Like Excel, it'll be like you're working on, you're entering something into a cell, and then you move on to the next one, and like in between tabbing over, it'll just freeze up.
Test one,
like,
two.
OneNote, it'll be like you'll be typing.
That's weird.
And then you'll notice like nothing's registering, and then like 10 seconds later, the text will appear.
Can you not
hear
me?
And then you'll like try and like open another tab, like the little how they do the pages in OneNote, like you've kind of like folders.
All right, I'm reconnecting, so they're going to be cut off for a second while I reconnect.
Disconnected from server. Just a
dragging connected. And dropping situation.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah. Did you drop out?
Yeah, I disconnected so that I would switch over to Ethernet. I was on Wi-Fi.
Oh, did we lose our conversation?
Just a split second.
Okay.
I missed the beginning of the drag and drop part. That's really counterintuitive. Yeah. Around that point, you guys weren't able to hear what I was saying. So I was agreeing that turning off hardware acceleration is pretty shitty.
What I was saying was that I was asking Nate, have you ever used it in a writing situation, or have you primarily used it just typing notes into it or printing pages into it and notating them?
Typing notes into it. That's pretty okay. Much it.
Yeah, I've never agreed or liked how they do the typing in OneNote, but I even back as far as 2003, the writing has been pretty smooth. It's just never been anything like with the iPad, or at least the newest iPad has. The Apple Pencil is a A+ product, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's nothing like it on the market right now.
Oh, wait for that iOS 11 update with the Notes app. You'll be able to drop the pencil to the screen when it's off and just start taking a note. That's going to be a big game changer because that's infinite paper. You don't have to turn the thing on or unlock it.
If they would just allow audio recording at that point as well, that's the one feature that the Windows version of OneNote has that the Mac version's never had and iOS has never even thought about having is if you're in a lecture and you've either started taking all your notes in OneNote or you printed the PDF into a OneNote folder and you're notating it, in the Windows version, you can record audio from the lecture, and then as you play it back, it scrolls to where you were in your notes, or vice versa. You go to where you are in your notes and you hit play, and it plays exactly what they were talking about at that point. They've never had that on a Mac version. They've never had it on the iOS version.
Mm-hmm. Well, not built into the OS, but there's been apps that do that for a while.
One issue I had with the Mac version that I cannot figure out the solution to of OneNote, because we have a client that runs the Office 365 apps on their Office 2016 apps through Office 365. They run it on their Mac, and you can't even if you set Outlook as the default mail app, if you've got attachments saved in OneNote and you double click on them to it would open in Outlook like a new email and then add the attachment, it defaults still to the mail app. And there's no way I found to be able to change that setting.
Is there a share panel, a share sheet in the app you're talking about?
In OneNote?
Any app, when you share something, should use the system's share sheet. So then you can put any app you want on the share sheet.
Okay. Well, I didn't know to do that, but I just thought that if you set the default mail app, it's kind of retarded too. You have to actually go into the mail app to set the default mail app.
You're talking about on OS 10?
Yeah, on Mac OS. You can't, it's not in the system preferences. Like, there's no settings to configure mail in there. It's weird because in iOS, it's in the settings to configure the mail. In iOS, it's intuitive, I think, how to configure the mail. But in Mac OS, you have to actually go into the mail app to choose your default mail program. So,
yeah, that is funny. It's kind of the opposite. I think with iOS, they wanted all applications to put their settings in the settings app. That's why on the settings screen at the bottom was all of your applications. And then you tap into there and you'd see settings. But every developer put their settings in the app instead of in settings.
Yeah.
So they just removed all that stuff at the bottom.
It's weird because I feel it's funny too, because I feel like iOS, they keep significantly improving, like making huge improvements, and macOS, I feel like they haven't really done much since like Yosemite.
It's because it's already there. iOS is slowly getting there.
It's not there, and you're being a homer.
But you know, iOS is their priority when they made their new file system. When they created their new file system for that first,
actually,
macOS is getting it.
It's been on the macOS for...
I thought they're releasing
since
it.
Since they released the beta, like, a year ago.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, this version...
It's not the default file system. Because there's legacy stuff that will break once they release it. There's just no getting around it.
I see.
But all the beta tests were done on the Mac.
So, file system stuff, we haven't talked about it. What do you think about the fact there's going to be an index of files across apps in iOS 11? That's got me pretty fucking hard right now.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's 2003.
I wonder if Microsoft will ever put REFS into Windows. And they've got it in Windows Server already, but in Windows desktop.
I don't remember what the features are of that.
Well, it's their proprietary file system. So yeah.
I just don't remember what the features were. Was it the one that's like a database?
It's got some,
because they've been promising fancy file systems since Vista.
We talked about this on a prior show. I don't remember. I gotta look it up. Hold on. Automatic integrity checking, data scrubbing, removing the need of running check disk, protection against data degradation, built-in handling of hard disk drive failure and redundancy, integration of the RAID functionality, switch to copy and allocate on write for data and metadata updates. handling a very long pass and file names and storage virtualization and pooling. Like it.
Channel, Nate, link to nwikipedia.org.
You would think, though, if they've already used it in server 2016, why couldn't they fork it to Windows 10 or Windows 11, whatever the next one would be?
I don't know.
It's obviously better than NTFS, so why wouldn't they use it?
Those features may not even benefit somebody on a local, on a desktop.
Probably not.
The reason being, there's no additional disk, unless they ran a mirror RAID or something.
Yeah.
Is there a parity section of the disk that you can build in? Because with most of these software file system features, you have to have a redundant disk in order to do something once you you notice that the file is no longer good because the checksum doesn't match. Like, even with ZFS, you could see that the file is, it's been modified, it's no longer valid, it's corrupted, but you can't restore it or heal it unless you're in a RAID Z, or whatever they call it, mirror, whatever, one of the RAID modes. You gotta have a redundant disk. And I assume it's the same with ReFS.
Max volume size for this is 1 yababyte.
Oh, they're using this IETF standard for measuring. Doesn't that bother you?
1024 zettabytes. What the hell are these?
It's because it's a made-up standard.
Yeah.
Everybody says gigabyte because that's the. Is that the IETF standard? Basically, there's like a standard that's made by some engineering nerds, and then there's the standard that's used by the computer industry.
There's metric and IEC, from what I can see here. So the metric one is
yottabyte.
So, yeah, you're right. So, and that's the highest. Yottabyte and yababyte, zettabyte instead of zebibyte.
Yeah, they're trying to read
exabyte. Yeah, that. Yeah, those sound more familiar. Petabyte, yeah,
JEDEC.
Exabyte.
JEDEC. Let's see what that stands for. It's joint something, right? Why is this hard to find? Can you look that up?
Yeah, JDEC committee, JC41. I don't know what the acronym makes sense. No, I thought I found it.
Basically, it's the standard that everybody you've ever talked to uses when they're referring to a kilobyte, megabyte, gigabyte, and the standard by the IEC, which I was saying IETF, but IEC, they want you to say gibibyte, mebibyte, and kibibyte. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's stupid.
I think it measures things a little different too.
It does. It's 1024 instead of 1000.
Well, that's just because it's base 2. Your file system, I think, normally shows things in base 2. The hard drive manufacturers use base 10. So they say it's a 1 terabyte drive, but really it's 936 or something.
I'll just link you what I'm looking at, because this is...
Channel, Nate, link to nwikipedia.org.
The IEC, because decimal is metric and binary is IEC, and the values are different for decimal and binary. Binary is 1024, decimal is 1000.
Yeah, binary is base 2, and decimal, that's different though. The IEC standard is the terminology for megabyte, gigabyte, and I think it even measures the base 2 slightly differently. I can't keep clicking around. I keep getting weird packet loss issues. It messes up the audio, but base 2 is binary. You double every time. Everything's divisible by 2. Okay. And the decimal stuff's divisible by 10. It's all powers of 10, something like that.
That makes sense, yeah. What else?
I'm pretty sure only the hard drive manufacturers use that.
Oh, I saw Dunkirk.
Tell me it was awesome.
It was good. I liked it. It's, well, you know what it is? It's like every other Christopher Nolan movie, though. You gotta see, probably gonna have to see it more than once to fully understand it. Because I can't really say anything. Like, all I can say is it jumps around a lot, but intentionally, it makes sense at the end. And it's extremely loud. Like, I saw it in IMAX, because you have to. It's filmed in 70mm. And it was like, there's a scene where, like, they're standing on the beach, and there's, like, a German plane that comes, like, nosediving in to, like, just mow them down. And it's so loud, like the build up to it, it feels like you're like actually standing there and the plane's flying over your head. It's that loud. And maybe they did that intentionally for effect. And like the soundtrack was really like, it was, there's music playing nonstop, like from beginning to end there's like music playing. And sometimes it gets so loud, like the bass and stuff, that you can't hear what the guy that they're saying on the screen. But it's really good. It's really well executed. It's not, I wouldn't say it's better than Saving Private Ryan, but it's really different. It's just a different kind of war movie. You just have to see it. And it's one of those movies you have to see in the theaters, because I don't think it would be as, it wouldn't have the same impact on you if you watched it at home on a TV screen. It's kind of like, that's how all of his movies are, though. That's how Interstellar was. That's how Inception was.
Yeah.
Like, he designs his movies. He's like Stanley Kubrick, kind of. Like, the way he designs his movies. It's he designs it. He makes it about, like, there could be nothing going on in a certain scene. It could be someone just standing there. But, like, the way it's shot and presented, it's like Kubrick, the way he does it. And so that's why his movies are really good to see in theaters.
Yeah, I liked Interstellar. I didn't get to see the new one. I know you just said the name. I'm not...
Dunkirk.
Yeah, Dunkirk. It's not on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like it, though. I think, like, the critics loved it, but I think, like, a lot of the audience didn't like it, because they were probably going in to expect, like... And that's another thing, too. You kind of have to know a little bit of history to enjoy that movie. I had to, like, explain everything to my girlfriend. Like, as we were watching it, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, these are the bad guys. These are the good guys. Like, and then the French are, like, in the middle, too. And so it's, like... They don't really explain very much. And it's foreign, too. So it's not an American story. It's not like Iwo Jima or Pearl Harbor or, you know, Normandy. It was a different thing that wasn't really talked about here very much.
Yeah.
But we're seeing.
Sounds like
what,
it.
What was that?
It's worth seeing.
Yeah, you saw it too, Roadhouse?
No, that's what I was asking. It's worth seeing, though.
Oh, for yeah, sure. Totally. You got to see it in IMAX, though.
I want to see Atomic Blonde.
That's the next one I want to see, too. I've heard it's ridiculous, though. Like, it's in a good way.
I bet.
Like, Crank level of violence. I don't know if you ever saw the Crank movies.
I saw parts of them. I think you shared me some. You want to talk about net neutrality and how over the top people are getting about it?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're
being manipulated.
Yeah. Like, well, same with the climate change shit. Same
Let's just thing. Talk about net neutrality, because right. It's a lot cleaner. Do you remember the series of tubes video?
Yes, I do.
And what was the name of that politician? The old guy that died in a plane crash.
Yeah,
Ted Stevens.
Ted Stevens, there you go.
I just needed a refresher. I'm searching for the video. All right, and he is only famous for this.
Is allowing all of these entities that support this to provide streaming stuff going on the internet. Now, the internet, you know, let's go back. Internet started with a concept of local-to-local connections across the country, and you could go for Air Alaska, but you had to go through local connections to get there. The industry wisely provided for streaming for, in effect, a new kind of long distance, and that's what we've got. We've got a service that's immune to distance, and it's there for the consumer. But when we take indicate that anyone that wants to use the
he's a bumbling idiot
system for massive
like all politicians
purposes. Well, there's one company now you can get sign up and you can get a movie delivered to your house.
He's talking about Netflix.
By subscription by delivery service, okay? And currently it comes to your house.
Were there people laughing in Congress when he was doing this?
I don't. Well, no, this is 2006 or 2005. This is 10 years ago. I just want to play this to set me up for how the term net neutrality has been revitalized and perverted.
Annually or monthly, you change your order, but you pay for that, right? This service is now going to go through the internet, and what you do is you just go to a place on the internet, and you order your movie, and guess what? You can order 10 of them, and it's delivered to you, and this delivery charge is free, right? 10 movies streaming across that internet, and what happens to your own personal internet? I just the other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday.
I got internet yesterday.
Why? Because it got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. And here we have this one situation where enormous entities want to use the internet for their purpose to save money for doing what they're doing now. They use FedEx. They use the delivery services. They use the mail. They deliver in other ways, but they want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet. And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
That leads to this.
The internet is not a big truck. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. The internet is not a big truck. The internet is a series of tubes. The internet is not the internet.
The techno remix. That is what this bumbling old man is famous for, besides crashing dying spectacularly in a plane crash in Alaska. Oh, the other thing he's famous for is basically stealing a bunch of money by attaching a bridge building bill to like a military spending bill and building a bridge to nothing, to an island, to nowhere. It's called the Bridge to Nowhere. If you Google it, Ted Stevens, he's on the wiki page. Net neutrality is about legislation. And in 2006, that's what they were trying to do. They wanted a net neutrality bill, which means they want laws on the internet.
If I Google search Bridge to Nowhere, it comes up with San Gabriel Mountains.
That's another one in California. It's because Google's searches are emphasizing local things.
1936.
Bridge to Nowhere, Alaska. We'll get a better result then on the Book of Knowledge.
All
right. And it's about using Congress to enforce the will of big telecommunications businesses like AT&T. AT&T, from what I understood back then, AT&T was paying Ted Stevens to go and promote this. He is going around promoting this idea that there should be laws. Laws are local. The internet's global, so it's a stupid idea to have laws restricting the internet. Because it doesn't affect anybody except for the people in the U.S. So, despite the empowerment of the FCC to enforce the perverted, the way people see net neutrality today is that it's a thing that you need to be protected, and that the internet will become bad if it stays the way it is. And despite having new powers or whatever it was that the FCC had, these same people, by their Virgin Mobile or no, T-Mobile plans with their unlimited music streaming and unlimited Netflix and unlimited YouTube plans, which is the exact opposite, but really it's the exact opposite of what they want. They want every service to be accessible and accessible at the same level. Same, just whatever they can deliver, that's what I want. But net neutrality is about the opposite, where certain services get preferential treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the short version of it.
It's funny because these bills are always disguised as a name that means the opposite of what it is, actually. Yeah.
And hence the name net neutrality.
It has nothing to do with the net being neutral. It's...
Well, that's what they sell. They're selling the idea that
they're sell going the to idea make of the net fairness. Neutral. That's what they're selling. And then they're now you got to pay if you're going to use more.
This is what AT&T wants. Not that you have to pay to use more. Well, I guess that's part of it. They're selling the idea that the internet needs the use of force backing laws to twist the arms of whoever they want.
Yeah, it's all about
squeeze out competition.
Yeah, it's not even about that, actually. Yeah, it's about the FCC just getting involved, and then they have their dirty fucking hooks in whatever. They can make any laws they want from there on out.
Yeah, but they're ineffective because the internet's global.
Yes, but you know the with DNS and all that, though. So DNS comes... What about DNS? Well, they don't... isn't there some governing body in charge of the DNS? Is it ICC?
ICANN.
And ICANN, yeah. And they're just like the FCC. They could do whatever they want at any point and screw that up. But there'll always be the idea of the internet will always be around. There'll always be another solution that'll arise. You'll have a dark net, and then you'll have a second internet that'll come up after that.
Those are all invented terms after this,
right?
Co-opting of the term net neutrality, the introduction of the term cyber, and as a prefix to fucking everything, and then the vocabulary for everything related to a hack being militarized. So everything's an attack now, or so they would say a cyber attack. Just insert the prefix cyber, insert the military term after it. It's the government recognizing, the people who call themselves government recognizing the existence of the internet and catching up and trying to take over. What do you think about that explanation? Cyber was not a word that was used before that, besides ASL.
Yeah. That's funny. ASL.
You want a cyber baby?
Well, I don't remember. I can't even remember any sites where people would go on and do that. That was so long ago. I mean, there was always IRC chat rooms and stuff, but MySpace didn't have a messenger system. I don't think that didn't come around till Facebook.
Never had an account. I don't know. What does Roadhouse think?
Roadhouse is thoroughly confused by the idea of net neutrality after this discussion.
The internet is not something that you just is not, the internet is not a big truck. The internet.
This,
streaming stuff under the internet. Why? Tubes. The
tubes. Do you get it now?
This beer, I'm not even halfway through this and I'm feeling fucked up already.
It's 8%.
No, it's 10.5%.
Oh, man. You just had two beers. When you finish it, you're going to have 4 pints. Basically 4 pints in you.
Yeah, it's strong. It starts hitting you after a little bit.
Yeah, that beer needs to get colder. The longer you drink it, the colder it should get.
Yeah, I need to put it back in the fridge. Here, talk for a second. I'll run this back real quick.
All right.
Here's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
So I was talking to someone from Reddit, so take it with a grain of salt. Or don't, whatever.
Some SJW?
No, not at all. Someone that worked for an ISP. And they were telling me about all the requirements that they had to have to make sure they were compliant with giving everybody the same speed tubes once they got to the ISP. And it seemed like a huge headache for a situation that didn't merit it. But then on the other side, I don't know about you, I still don't want to get an ad that tells me that if I upgrade my service, I'll get faster Netflix.
Did you ever get one before?
No, I did not. That's the thing, is that it's all seems to be based on a hyperbolic situation from the future that if it ever happens would make a lot of people mad, but doesn't really happen at this point.
Oh, fear, uncertainty, and doubt?
That would be a good way to describe all three of the emotions that you feel at that point, yes.
Yeah, it's very effective. Also, in this time period, basically 2010... maybe 2009 to 2010 and forward with the introduction of the word cyber. It makes you sound like a faggot. And all the other stuff I covered. Fuck, I just lost my train of thought. I'm trying to reset this hardware backup system and it's the hardware recorder. And it derailed me.
Fighting with you.
But still, it seems like you're either... I'm just trying to take a practical understanding of what you guys are both talking about. It just seems like you either have to be the way this is framed on the side of the businesses being able to decide how they deploy their networks, or the consumer saying, no, this isn't right. I'm not getting fair treatment. And anytime you bring the F word in, I think it's bullshit anyway.
Yeah, the fact that you can't have an alternative opinion to the word net neutrality anymore... It's a meaningless word, first of all. So the word's lost all meaning, and you're evil, and they'll actually post a full front page newspaper article with your name on it if you're a representative. They'll say that you're a representative of this state, and here's the list of people who voted against net neutrality is what I saw on Reddit. So somebody is paying for this whole idea and to run ads in local papers with lists of representatives to shame them. This is a moneymaker. Isn't Netflix, aren't they for net neutrality?
No, they're against it because they have those boxes set up.
I shouldn't even use the word net neutrality because I'm confused now.
Wait, maybe
I think that they want legislation because they can force ISPs to carry their traffic at a huge cost to their bandwidth bill, and they don't have to put a device on premises to reduce the bill.
Yeah, and they don't. They're just basically saying our CDN can't be slowed down compared to any other website, server, whatever you want to call it. And for them, that's not fair. The other direction, is it? They consume what 40% of the bandwidth for the entire world.
In the case with Comcast, they wanted to put a device on premises. Comcast said, "We don't want it," and. I'm pretty sure they were throttling them.
Netflix is in debt right now. I think they're losing money. $20 billion in debt.
I think they'll be fine. Didn't they?
Yeah, no, they'll be fine. But I'm just saying they're not the money maker everyone thinks they are.
What other instances of ISPs throttling can you think of? Because I can't think of
any of them.
I can think of like, I can struggle to think of four, and most of them are Comcast, and it has to do with them throttling torrents, and then the famous one of them throttling Netflix.
Verizon Wireless was doing it too. There was some Netflix actually has their own speed test now. If you go to fast.com.
How much did they pay for that domain?
I don't know, but I like it because it's not flash based. You don't need flash to run it, so it's handy when I'm at clients. I actually
don't think
use
you need
this
it on speed test anymore.
No, you do. Unless you're using Chrome, it still says you need flash installed.
Hmm.
But this is handy because I use this at clients, and it's not 100% accurate, but it's pretty close. There's something about the way they use this algorithm for the way this algorithm is done. It specifically tailors your speed test to see if it's going to be good enough for streaming video. So I think there's some other trickery that's going on while it's doing the speed test, as opposed to like Ookla's, where whatever it is, OOKLA. You choose a server. Obviously, you're going to choose whichever one's closest to you, or LA or something like that for us. So you're going to get speed. You're going to get results based on which server you choose. This, you don't choose a server. It just, you, as soon as you go, the site starts running. So I like
That's pretty cool. I wonder if it hits one of their local caches. Because it's Netflix. So they've got little disk caches all over the place.
Yeah, probably. It says mine's fast. So it says 180 for mine. I know I normally get about 230.
I'm trying to think of where I was going with that that thought before when Roadhouse asked a question. I don't know, but I'm just
talking about Netflix. They're losing money, and then talking about whether or not they're going to be for net neutrality.
They're for legislation. That is,
yeah, for
I'm sticking to the what it is that they're for, not that retarded term, because it's doublespeak.
Yeah, it is really like the Patriot Act.
You're not a patriot. Shut up, slave.
The National Defense Authorization Act.
Yeah.
Where they can black bag you.
And deploy the military.
Without any due process. Yeah.
Within the country.
Yeah.
I thought I lost my Contigo, my thermos for coffee. And I was going to use Prime Now to order a new one and get it delivered to my house in 2 hours.
Then what happened?
But then I reviewed my dash cam footage and I saw one of the bags that I've only touched this one bag to work on stuff at clients 2 times. And I put it in that bag because it was unbalanced. It was like leaning to one side when I picked it up. It's like a work bag. So it's got two troughs.
Spill everywhere.
No, it's a auto sealing Contigo. So I can be driving through traffic and some guy can cut me off and I can just chuck it to the floor and chase the guy down and the thing's automatically sealed. You have to hold the thing down actively for it to dribble.
Okay.
And then there's even a locking thing on it on the new ones now. The old ones didn't have a lock, and if you put it in your backpack, you could risk it getting pressed and squirting inside your bag. Highly recommend that one. It doesn't keep your liquids hot or cold like for the entire day like some other brands, but it does it for long enough that your coffee is going to be oxidized by the time you drink it. So or by the time it's cold.
I think I had one of those. I don't know what happened to it, but it's the one where you press, it's got like the button and then like the little zipper, it pulls like the little lever down and then it opens a little hole.
Yeah.
And then like you flip the cap open over and then it's got like this mechanism and you like have to open it up to clean it out and stuff.
I just wash it. As long as you don't use sugary shit in there and it's just black coffee.
I had a problem with the one I used to put tea in it, green tea, and there's something about like the metal and the green tea, they didn't go well together. And I used to put matcha in it too, and it tasted weird. It tasted like burnt. Like I think it's like it cooks itself when you pour it in there hot. Like
you could have burned it, yeah. And where are you using a burner on the stove? Or you know?
No, instant hot water from a cooler in my work.
Maybe it's steeping too long or something. But that is what matcha kind of tastes like, doesn't it? Roasted.
It's not supposed to be burnt, though. It's supposed to be... Matcha's kind of like... it has no flavor. It's just...
If you drink it with paper, I could see it having no flavor. But in porcelain or the metal, I could see it...
It makes your green tea frothy. That's all it does. And it's really good for you. And it has a lot of caffeine. Matcha, I think, is like... Like normal green tea, I think is only like 50, maybe 45, 50 milligrams a cup. But if you add matcha to it, you can get more caffeine in that than you can in a black coffee. You can get like over 100 milligrams.
I've never cleaned any of my Contigos.
Ugh, all that coffee residue.
Oh, they have a black patina on the inside. You can run your finger on it and reveal the steel underneath it. And you get this black soot on your fingers.
Why do you keep drinking out of that? What's that doing?
That enhances the flavor.
Ugh. it's moldy coffee.
It's not. Those are really good fresh beans.
There could be bacteria in there.
Caffeine's antiseptic enough that I've never had any type of bacteria. Plus, I don't leave it in the heat and I let it dry till it's bone dry. Never cleaned it though. Proud of that. It's disgusting. That's why I only put black coffee in there. No sugar. Nothing to fuel the bacteria or yeast or whatever would grow in there.
I gotta buy you a box of the coffee I drink at work, the Javali IK cups. They're good. I don't know if you've had them.
The ones that give you explosive diarrhea.
No, that's the which ones were those? Well, I get diarrhea from coffee, period. But the Javalia signature blend is a white roast, and it's really good. And their Colombian's good too. They're medium. By the way, I finished that bag of coffee you bought me. That was good. That had a lot of flavor. That also made me shit a lot.
That is good coffee. Yeah. That's the best coffee supplier you can find in Southern California, as far as I know.
Yeah, every cup of coffee I drank from that bag was made with the AeroPress. What I do is I switch around. I'll use the AeroPress and the Keurig, but for those K-Cups, though, those Javalia ones are really good. They're above average. Like they're not as good as, you know, like the Bodhi Leaf stuff, but they're, in their own right, they're really good, and it's consistent. It always tastes good. And you never have to add anything to it.
I'm always worried about what'll happen to my coffee and my coffee supplies. So I track coffee sort of detailed. And there's this Saudi, like, relative of somebody. He's got a bunch of money. He bought a coffee farm in Ethiopia, then paid off somebody to change the laws so that the other four or five coffee farms that have been around forever are ineligible for export, and he owns all of the Ethiopian exports now.
Huh.
Remember that porn site that got taken over by that Saudi guy? Pure TNA.
Which one? Oh yeah.
It was like 2005 when you would torrent porn because they didn't have streaming sites everywhere.
Yeah.
The good old days.
Pure TNA. That's funny.
That was a great site. Bought up by a Saudi guy, mismanaged, fucking turned to dust. I could probably buy the domain now.
That's great. This coffee is so backordered on Amazon. It says usually ships in 1 to 2 months. The Javalia signature blend.
That's weird. Are they shipping it from Jamaica?
I think they're just sold out. The Swedes know how to make coffee.
Where are they getting it from?
I don't know. Germany? I think they grow coffee in Germany.
No. It's got to be right along the equator. The farthest north you can grow coffee is in Santa Barbara, California.
That's pretty far above the equator.
It has a microclimate, and it grows in the shade of avocado trees. It's the only successful coffee farm.
Like, I know
that far
you can't
north.
Grow it in Russia, but I thought you could grow it in maybe Spain or something like that, Germany. Maybe
wherever
maybe
you're
Germany.
Near the equator, and it's got the right microclimate to mimic what they can produce in Ethiopia or in
I know
South
the best,
America.
Yeah, I know the best stuff comes from like Costa Rica, Colombia.
But those are all South based America, off the same branch.
Africa.
That those coffee strands were smuggled by a Dutch spy that drank his own piss and, well, drank his own piss so that he can give his water to the fucking plant. So the genetic variety of coffee plants in South America is more limited than the ones in Africa.
Hmm.
That's why I track Ethiopian coffee. Because just in Ethiopia, there's a whole bunch of different flavored Ethiopian coffee beans. Depends on the elevation.
Where are Arabica beans from?
That is a type of plant. And Robusta is the cheaper one. It tastes like burnt popcorn. So Arabica is the variety. There's two varieties. Robusta, Arabica.
Okay.
All the good ones are Arabica. It's tasty to find a nice, like a good bag of Robusta and then put a little scoop of that in there. Just add a little bit of popcorn twist to whatever coffee you like. But for the most part, you're not going to touch the Robusta bag because it's garbage. You'll struggle to drink 2 coffee cups of that.
It's used in instant coffee.
Yeah, it's trash. They all have the same flavor. It's like...
Ew, it looks like seeds. The beans, gross.
That's what they are. They're... pulpy coffee beans are
well I know that's what they are. I know, but I'm just saying it looks literally like if I was staring at a pile of sunflower seeds. Like
they're light
when I'm looking at it. It's weird.
They're like a white seed.
Yeah, they're lighter definitely.
In a fruit. It would be like
Channel
having a slightly
Nate,
larger
link
grape.
To upload Wikimedia
org. Maybe because they haven't been roasted yet. Oh yeah, they're unroasted. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, that's what good coffee beans look like when they're slightly darker. So you linked me to a light-colored variety of coffee beans kind of sitting on a table or something. And when they're roasted, like in Ethiopia, they can sun roast them. So they leave some of the pulp on the fruit so that it kind of ferments slightly. And then leave them in the sun so that they get roasted to dry them out. And they'll be slightly
darker.
How do
they cook them?
They'll be like skin dark. Like that type of like light brown tone. And the good ones are light roasts. Anything beyond a light roast is a bad bean. Or it's a bad bean. If it's a medium roast, it could be a good bean. But why would you waste a good bean if you could have done it light? Everything right. Like a medium to dark, medium's sort of pushing it. Dark roasts are just the leftover shit that could have been rotting. And
so why do they call
the
it? So I know you told me they call the French roast the French roast because they had to burn it to get the prevent the bacteria from setting in. But what about Italian roasts? Because those are dark too. Is it the same idea?
Yeah, okay. You would never dark roast a bean unless you had to. Because
some people like the flavor,
good.
Though. Like, I know, like...
Coffee
I know,
on a light roast is good.
I know several people that... You know, it's funny. When I first started drinking coffee, I liked dark roasts the best. And
yeah, I thought that was the key. I thought that's what you want is a dark roast. No, you want a light roast.
Well,
you
I always want the
flavor
medium.
Of the bean. You want medium. Actual coffee flavor.
Like what, dark roast is what I liked initially, but anytime I went to Starbucks or Pete's Coffee or the Coffee Bean, I would always try to get a medium roast because I would only want a dark roast in the morning if I wanted a caffeine jolt and to shit my brains out.
There's less caffeine in a dark roast. There's more in a light.
Yeah, I didn't know that till later, but I think there's more catechins or whatever the shit is, the oils and stuff, and the beans, I think, is more released more when they're overcooked. So there's something about the dark roast that, even though it has less coffee, it will make you shit.
If you
guaranteed.
Ask the Bulletproof Coffee guy, he would say it's because of the mycotoxins, that there's bacteria in the bean, which would be why they roasted the shit out of it to begin with. And it's making you sick. But that Bulletproof Coffee guy sounds like a con. Well,
yeah,
I don't want to say
bullshit claims.
He seems sketchy.
Yeah,
So my other site, mostvulnerable.com, some faggot tried to censor it and had Google block it. So it would be blocked by the safe browser thing saying that this is a deceptive website. It's an information page about watering hole attacks, and it lists the software that has had their legit downloads replaced with malware on their site. And because they had no way to authenticate it, they never knew, and the customer or the user of the open source project never knew when they downloaded it or were auto-updated to it, that what they downloaded was not produced by the developer, that it was malware, the systems got rooted, and exfiltrated all their keychain, so the keys to everything, even like the trusted keys for their iPhone that can decrypt their disk when they connect it to iTunes. They had that happen, and full disk encryption. So some of them, like with Handbrake, I think the first one was ransomware, and the second one exfiltrated your keychain. Transmission project got hacked. The Transmission BitTorrent client.
Right.
They were distributing malware. First one was ransomware. Second one exfiltrated your keychain. And the developers that made Handbrake got owned the same way. Didn't have a signature. No digital signature to authenticate the download. And as a result, the software developers Panic Inc. got owned because they were using Handbrake to rip DVDs. All their source code got leaked. All their SSH keys to their servers. Their accounts to GitHub. They could have injected code. They could have replaced the download links. They could produce a perfect binary of all the Transmit apps now. And they also stole the developer key, so they could even sign it with Apple's gatekeeper key, and your system would accept it. Not anymore, technically, with that key. As long as your macOS device, even your iOS device, is connected to the internet, it'll see that it's part of the certificate revocation list, and it shouldn't accept it, but hopefully. So, one of the companies versus the open source projects, one of the companies that was on mostvulnerable.com must have seen that they were on there and then tried to get the site blocked, but you can report that the site's being censored, and they pulled the block after just a couple hours. That was a shaggy dog story. How did I get there?
Oh man, I don't know what we're talking about. This fucking beer, man, I feel it a lot now.
Maybe we were talking about censorship on net neutrality.
Fuck. Yeah, net neutrality, censorship stuff. There's something I'm forgetting that I want to talk about. Oh, yeah, Plex. They released their live TV streaming service for the Apple TV. So it's not their service. They're just kind of facilitating it. So you get an antenna, like a pick up the radio signals. you get like a $60 Hapage, whatever that company is, that German company that makes those TV tuners. And then you, what you do is you just use that as the DVR. It takes that connection and then it brings in channels, basically the way they would show up in the TV app and tvOS, and it would bring up your shows that way. And then you could either watch them live as they come in, or you can record them to the DVR. So you have to have a secondary machine, like a NAS. They support the Drobo with it, or, you know, another Windows machine or Linux machine. They have like a compatibility list for the different tuner cards. And they tell you whether or not they work in Linux or Windows or whatever.
Man, don't even worry about getting a second computer. Just get a HD Home Run Prime, the two tuner version, and get a couple of them if you want more. What I hate about that project right now is they haven't found a way for you to tune into a channel and then record it at the same time, unless you started the recording beforehand.
That's what this Plex thing does. This is going to put... There's some other company that released an app for tvOS that... Works exclusively with the HD Home Run device, and they're gonna be put out of business because Plex, you pay $5 a month for the Plex Pass, and then you could take this anywhere you go with you. It'll go through your home server. You could watch live TV on your phone. This is gonna even be able to, like, because you can't even do this if you pay for cable. Like, if you pay for Cox or Spectrum or whatever, you can't watch on your phone outside of your home network. You can't watch all of the TV channels that you want. So with this, you'll be able to, at least for whatever you can pick up with the antenna, and then you have your subscriptions too with it, and then you can pay for Sling or something else like that. It's to get you to not have to pay $100 a month for your TV bill. Instead, it'll be about $5 for Plex, and then the free over-the-air channels, and then whatever your Netflix, Amazon, or HBO Go, Sling, DirecTV Now, any of those. You could tie those in too, and then you're probably only going to be paying less than $50 a month total for all that. So.
Oh yeah, I got all that part, and I actually have a Plex Pass already, but the current implementation of it, you can't record and watch at the same time, the same channel, unless you started recording it before you started watching it. So you can't be tuned into something,
I think,
decide I want to record that and then have a recording of it as well as watching it live.
You're supposed to be able to, because I was just reading up on that, because... They support the quad, they have a quad WinTV Hapage thing. So you could do two streams at once, like two video streams, and have two recordings going on. And then the Duo is supposed to be one stream, one recording.
Yeah, you can do a whole pile of that, you just can't do it on the same channel. So you're either watching a channel or you're recording a channel and watching what you previously recorded. You can't do both at the same time like you can with the TiVo.
TiVo's another subscription product.
Yeah, I understand. I have both. I canceled the TiVo because I thought Plex would get to where they were supporting it officially instead of just having to do a hacky homebrew thing. But they still, that's one limitation that will probably irritate a lot of people that try it. Overall function is awesome. But the fact that you can't be watching something, start recording it, and rewind or fast forward it without going to the actual recording you made instead of the live channel that you're watching.
Yeah, that's annoying. That's how it used to be, I think. No, actually, the TiVo always did it right.
Well, you can try a lot of homebrew subscription or homebrew stuff for the amount of money you spend in a year with a $15 a month TiVo subscription.
Okay, yeah, it says here you cannot initiate a recording of what you're currently watching in the client. If you wish to restart your recording, if you wish to start recording, you'll need to stop live playback and then start recording.
Yeah, it'll get there. It's just, I don't know, that part's not there yet, which sucks, but still being able to set your shows and record them and watch them at 3 in the morning is pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought initially you were talking about, like, doing 2 different shows at once, but yeah, if it's the same, you can't.
Wait, how does this device connect to the Apple TV?
So your Apple TV, you install this app, and then your Apple TV, or, well, the app is Plex, and then over your network, it picks up the machine that's got that TV tuner attached to it.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
Yeah. I wish they had an Open Media Vault plugin for, or not necessarily a plugin, but a, you know, some, I guess, yeah, it would have to be a plugin, some separate plugin to work with one of those TV tuners so that I could just have that run all from that one box. But I may have to, like, run a separate process that's outside of the OMV plugin repository to get that to work.
Was there
something
an update?
Something I'm going to do eventually. Right now, I'm pretty much locked in with my cable subscription that I pay for right now. But when I move out within the next year or so, this is something I'm going to seriously consider, because I like Plex a lot, and I don't think I'm going to get rid of my OMV box that's running my Plex server. So I'll just take it with me, and then I'll look at this as an option for my TV.
Was there an update to OMV?
They have updates all the time.
I thought there was a major one.
I'll have to look into it. They're usually later on the update schedule. I mean, Debian takes forever to release new updates, and then Open Media Vault, I think, releases updates after Debian releases updates.
Yeah, Debian 9, I think, came out recently. And the reason they take so long with the versions is their long-term support releases. They're not six-month releases like, what's it called? Ubuntu, all the versions that aren't even April releases.
Stretch Debian 9 is the new one.
So if you want something that's bleeding edge, you need to run SID, which is the unstable branch. But it gives you the latest and greatest. There might even be one that's more unstable than that, but I don't think so. And sometimes you use the SID branch to grab packages that you can't use in whatever the stable branch is, because they always change the name. FreeBSD 11.1 came out also. That's a big update. I was going to update my local system. It has a mirrored SSD RAID in it, and I can't restart it right now because the other disk tends to fail or something. It disconnects. So I have to remount it, nuke it, then re-silver it with my side of the mirror. Or I reboot and end up with 2 disks that I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to be booting off of.
This is a cool desktop environment for Debian. I'm gonna link you. It's not, well, it's
channel,
a tailored
Nate, link to Voyager
it's a tailored
Live
release.
Voyager Live. What's cool about it?
It's interesting. Like, aesthetically, it looks nice. It doesn't look like because the mate desktop looks pretty basic.
You know you could just install this, right? Just install Debian and then install GNOME or install KDE.
Yeah, this is just the wrong... I don't even know if this is the official link to the site. Oh, this is it here.
Any desktop environment you want, just install it. You don't need to go to some weird French website to find...
No, I was linking you this so you could see what it is. It looks cool. This is based on Debian 9. This is the newest release, so.
All right. It does look cool. It's French.
Yeah, it's French, huh?
Yeah.
It's interesting. They have a Ubuntu version 2, 1604.
Photography.
I like this stuff. Like, I've always wanted to kind of like, that's like kind of like a, that'll never happen, but like replace your Windows desktop with just a Linux desktop that would look something like this. That'd be cool.
Give it a try.
Yeah.
Why not?
I can't. I told you, I use my Windows machine as a gaming rig. That's all it is to me. And there's no, I mean, yeah, I do other stuff on it too, but it's primarily a gaming rig, and my work stuff I do on my MacBook. So
there's and no. And you use Windows there too?
No. When I take my MacBook to clients, I do everything in Mac OS, unless for a specific reason I have to load my Windows Boot Camp install, and then, you know, like if I'm, because you know you can't mount in OS 10, you can't NTFS formatted drives, you can't
write to them.
Yeah, that's it. So like then I would have to boot into my my Windows install, but that I would way rather have. The reason I would always rather have a MacBook than a Windows laptop is purely from the fact that I can run two OSs at any time. I can run Mac OS and Windows on a Windows machine, you know, a Dell or something like that. I can't run Mac OS. So, and the Mac is going to run Windows 10 just as well as any hardware equivalent, you know, Dell or whatever, Lenovo laptop. The driver support is iffy at first, as it was on my Mac with the Boot Camp install, but over time it got way better. It's funny because I use, whether I'm in Mac OS or whether I'm in Windows on that machine, I can't believe that it's going to be a 4-year-old notebook in like a couple months.
Yeah, the metal age as well. You don't even notice it.
I was reading a Mac Rumors post where it was like a poll or something where they said, would you rather have the new MacBook Pro or the last gen? And I think the poll was the last gen one. And someone said that, sorry, I got close to the mic. And someone said that you're probably better off if you bought a MacBook from 2012 to 2013, because you've got Thunderbolt, you've got USB 3, you've still got all the original USB ports. You got MagSafe still, and you got the fast flash memory. You've got most of the modern features that even the new MacBook Pro. Well, what the new MacBook Pro removed, you know,
you're always better off with the newest. There's no future in any of that.
You're right.
The reason we bought it is because that was the newest thing, and at the time there was very little.
The point is, you're in good shape if you bought one from that era, from that those couple
because
years.
Because you bought it at the beginning of the change.
True.
So with USB-C, if you were able to switch all your devices and plugs and stuff to USB Type-C, you'd probably be in pretty good shape for a while, because that's a small form factor, and that's going to be needed for any small device.
I just fucking hate that you can't, like, the whole MagSafe thing was supposed to be a solution to a problem.
Oh, I know. That drives me nuts. MagSafe was so good.
I know. And they removed that. And yeah, they
total step backward.
There's things that are just like, they made too many. I feel like the new MacBook Pro is an amazing machine. It's really nice. But I feel like they compromised on a lot of things when they were creating it. Like, they compromised on the RAM. They compromised on getting rid of MagSafe for USB 3.0 or USB-C power.
They didn't take a step backward on the RAM. The
iconic light up Apple logo on the back is gone now. That's just, it's all reflective metal now. It's there's just little things like identity things about it too that they've changed, but I like the keyboard way better. The keyboard's amazing on it for what it is. For
that's funny that you say that. I was about to complain about it.
I love it. It's growing on me. I don't know. I really like it. I think you know what it is? Because I hit, like, my keystrokes are hard. Like, I just kind of come down hard on keys. And so with that keyboard, it feels like it's like you're kind of typing on a flat surface, but there's still
they give. Pop.
Like, there's still, you still feel like there's a tactile feedback to it.
Yeah.
And you don't feel that. You don't feel that in a Dell laptop keyboard. The keys are fucking mushy. They feel like slim versions of your desktop keyboard. And so they're kind of mushy, and your fingers just kind of like, you know, they don't fully depress. They feel like you're just kind of mushing your fingers in your keyboard. Whereas on the MacBook, I feel like I'm kind of like, you know, each finger is like kind of stabbing at the keys, and like, it feels like very mechanical and precise. I like the new touchpad a lot too. I like how big it is. That's the one feature on the current MacBook Pro, or the 2013 MacBook Pro that I, or any of the previous MacBook Pros, the first unibody or the second, the trackpad feels too small for how big the 15 inch is. It feels fine on a 13.
It is the big trackpad. You know that? Like, it was bigger than its predecessor, and the predecessor was bigger than the predecessor.
Yeah, but it still is a lot better. Even the old gen trackpad is still better than.
Can you feel any it of the on Windows, the new one?
Any of the Dell or some, whatever Lenovo ones, but I
can you feel the new one? Like, can you feel it tap you?
It feels like it's weird. It feels like it's like you're like a trampoline kind of. You know, like you're pressing and then you press a little bit harder and then it's a second click.
Oh yeah, it is weird. Like I forgot about that.
It's like it feels like it's bending in on itself, and then you turn the thing off. It's completely powered off, and then you press it and it's totally solid. It doesn't budge at all.
It doesn't move at all.
It's so weird.
It's completely solid state. It's like your iPhone. If you've ever turned it off and you go to push the home button, you don't feel it tap you.
Yeah.
It uses that haptic feedback thing, but I have trouble feeling when I'm typing or when I'm pressing the trackpad because I don't feel like there's enough tactile feedback. And if my hands were slightly cold, I would have no sensation typing.
I can feel the depth. It's weird. It feels like it's recessed and it's like going downward when you do the second click, you know?
It does slightly, because you're technically bending the glass a little bit, but very slightly.
Yeah, I like it a lot. But you know what I think, though? Every time I use it, I think more moving parts, more things that are going to fail eventually. And
is it a moving part? The haptic engine is. But
it's got a little thing in there that moves around so to create that. So what happens when that goes out? Is that a replacement part you're going to be able to get from Apple, or is that you're going to have to scrap the whole thing and get a new one?
They would open it up and replace it. It would be attached to the body, so that if there's a battery on the way, they'd probably have to, like, it's their problem. It's not user replaceable, let's say that. When you have a physical trackpad that moves, like, I have a duplicate version of this same laptop, and my 2012 Retina MacBook Pro, that is. The other one has a little piece of sand or something underneath the trackpad on the left side, and that causes it to click early, so you can't feel the sensation of it clicking, but just resting your finger there, or it's like scrolling, causes it to click, because the little piece of sand moved a half a millimeter, and it selected something. That's one of the problems with having an actual, like, moving glass trackpad. And that's one of the complaints about the new keyboard, is that it's so thin. If you get even a little piece of crumb, like a little giblets of something you're eating, something falls in there, and then the key gets stuck. And then you have an unresponsive O key or something. Any good horror stories at work?
Not really.
I know I have some. I'm just trying to think of them.
I'm going to have to go here in a minute because Ford's coming over.
All right. Any last words, Roadhouse? Nate?
Stay safe out there.
Play the, what was it? Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where he calls them fags.
Oh, yeah.
There was another one, too, the South Park one.
I'm going to just play my favorite song in the world. For purposes, they truck long distance. I'm just stalling. Give me a second.
Position.
All right, I found it. Let's just see if I can get VLC open. I think VLC got hit with a watering hole attack sometime.
Oh, those guys are fags!
That's fantastic.
Excellent.
Oh, those guys are fags!
There's a new Place Boing song. It's called Belieber. I think I might play that.
Like Justin Bieber?
Yeah. It's Alex Jones and Justin Bieber.
Alright.
Sounds like chaos. Bringyourwallet.com/contact for feedback and suggestions. Bringyourwallet.com/donate to support the show and share the show. Tell your friends that you learned something from the show, that we delivered value, and while you're telling them that, remember to donate to the show. Value for value.
Oh, those guys are fags!
That's fantastic.
Justin Bieber.
Bieber.